Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, the Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Have you guys been? At least that's the question that we've been getting in our inbox. All three emails have been inundating our email inbox, Francois. Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. My name is Graham. There's no Tim this week. We can't really track down Tim, but here we are. It's been about 3-4 weeks probably since the last time I've seen you.
Yeah, definitely, man. Well, you know, I've been interviewing for the Minnesota Vikings head coaching position that's going to be vacant soon.
And so. You probably have more credentials than Brad Childress, so
for sure.
I can't really blame you for that. So since the last time we've been on the show together, Ottawa's gone on a bit of a roll. We're above 500.
How many teams with a record above 500 have we beaten is the question.
Very true. But we did beat Boston last night. That team has been playing some pretty good hockey.
Good all-around performance, I thought. Solid 60-minute effort, which we haven't seen a whole lot of from the Senators so far this year. But I thought they played a really solid road game. To use the old cliche.
Brian Elliott also played a very good game last night. He's been limiting his mistakes. His penchant for giving up the soft goal hasn't been there. Bruce Garriott has anointed him as Ottawa's number one goalie. And for a guy who has beaten the drum for a goaltending controversy in Ottawa, that is huge. That is epic, Francois.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for some inexplicable reason, I do think that even though he's lost almost all the games he's started, LeClair has played really, really well, but for some reason the team just doesn't show up in front of him when he's in net. So
it was almost the same situation last year, though, before he got hurt. For whatever reason, yeah, they just couldn't seem to play a style that benefited him.
I mean, my thing, you know, I have nothing against Elliott. I think he's a solid NHL backup or a good 1B type of guy. He doesn't really look pretty in the nets. Like, he doesn't make a lot, but I mean, neither does Tim Thomas, and that doesn't seem to affect him either. So as long as he keeps the puck out of the net, I'm good with it. And as long as the team plays well in front of him, I'm really good with it.
His rebound control has actually been pretty good, though.
It's been better. Yeah.
I went to the game against Atlanta, and he was kicking out the pucks to the right spots. And I noticed that was happening a lot last night. Corey Kluson has said that his rebound control has shown steady improvement in the last number of games.
And he made a couple of really key saves at key times last night in the game. When the game was still kind of make a game out of it, they were still in the game, and Elliott shut the door on them. So that was nice to see as well.
And he's also been the recipient of some lucky bounces. Like, there's the instance where Blake Wheeler hit the puck in with his glove. And so he's been fortuitous in that sense as well. But yeah, Ottawa's defensive play has improved remarkably when that guy is in net.
Now, despite the fact that overall, I guess we agree on the fact that that was a really good team game, team effort. Is there anything that stuck out to you in last night's game or over the past couple individual players or some things that you're really not liking right now?
Not liking? Well, before I get to that, the first line of Kovalev, Peter Regan, and Jason Spezza has been playing lights out hockey.
And run with it, Corey.
Yeah, run with it, Corey. But at the same time, what you've been left with is a second line of Mahalik, Fisher, and Alfredson that, albeit they've had, I think there was one or two games where Alfredson was playing with Fisher, where he put up a number of power play points against Buffalo and Phoenix earlier, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. But aside from that, that's a line that really hasn't gelled for me. And I've talked to you off air a number of times about this, but Mike Fisher looks like he's banged out. And I know he's had a couple of maintenance days where he's missed practice. I think it was Scott MacArthur on Twitter who noted that Fisher returned to practice for like the two games but consecutively for the first time all season, I believe. So I think he's dealing with something. It hasn't been disclosed yet, but he's not even asserting himself physically, and that's what he's renowned for. And if he's not doing that, then he's pretty much useless.
That's
a little harsh, but...
Well, I have to agree with you. The thing with Mike Fisher is he has always been the type of player that has frustrated us because all the tools are there, yet it seems like he never quite puts up, from a points production standpoint, he never quite puts up the numbers that we would expect out of someone with those kinds of tools. But you can live with it because he brings so many other things to the table. He's out there like a Tasmanian devil sometimes, you know. He bounce off 2-3 guys in one shift.
And he's a handsome man.
Well, exactly. Merchandising. But I think the issue is that if he's not scoring and he's not playing physical hockey, and he's been terrible on faceoffs, like brutal. I mean, he's not really much. Like, should he be out there? Because
they asked that question to Corey Clouston in one of the practices, and one of his comments was for cap reasons. They couldn't bring up someone to like fill that void just because they're right at the cap ceiling. They're right at the threshold, so they can't afford to sit Mike for a couple games and let him rest his injury.
But that's kind of weird, eh? Because like in the NHL, they don't have a DL like in other sports where you can like put a guy on the DL. And
well,
then...
they do have the long-term injury reserve, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Like a 15-day DL or something
exactly.
Like that. Or, I mean, actually, that might be something that the league should look into because of the cap issues, but... The problem is that regardless of whether Mike Fisher is healthy or not, he's bringing nothing to the table right now. Mahalik doesn't look good. Alfredson's out there on his own. And do you really want 37-year-old Daniel Alfredson, who usually plays with utter disregard for his own body and personal safety, to have to create his own shot on every single shift out there? Like, he's going to wear down by the All-Star break if this continues.
Depends on how much ice time he gets. Obviously,
he's killing penalties, right? Like, he shouldn't be, you know. Is the problem is that he would never say he wants to do all those things.
Well, look at him last year, right? He played through an abdominal injury.
Yeah,
you know, he played through a sports hernia. He's been playing with injuries throughout his whole career, especially in the last like 4 or 5 years. Like, he's not the kind of guy who's going to say, "Hey, don't give me the minutes." Whether that makes him more susceptible to injury, who knows? Knock on wood. But yeah, it's a bit disconcerting seeing Alfredson have to carry the line with those two guys who are coming off injury, or at least look like they're playing hurt.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, at the same time, it's tough to look at the rest of the lineup and say, well, who's a guy who Alfredson could play with if that top three of Spezza, Regan, and Kovalev are playing well? Because let's face it, once you get past some of those older vets, there's nothing on Ottawa's roster that resembles skill.
No.
All apologies to Ryan Shannon.
Yeah.
You know, so who do you put him with? And there's nothing in the system that Alfredson could play with to make him a better player right now.
No, exactly.
So you just kind of grin and bear it.
Rocking a hard place.
You hope at some point Brian Murray's going to look into a deal. And I know I've been championing getting a second-line center in here ASAP, but...
There's who, like, you can't get
who's
one.
Available right now that you're going to get?
And I'm really scared that Brian Murray, you know... trying to improve the prospects of this season is going to would do something stupid.
Well, that's always a concern.
Whenever Brian Murray has to pick up the bat phone for a trade, I think, I don't know, I hold my breath.
Yeah. Well, it's true, though, because in the last number of years, he's made a couple of rental deals, and it has worked out.
I think a lot of it, like it's unlucky as well, but he's gotten fleeced on a lot more deals than he's benefited.
Well, that's the thing, right? He's never really made a trade that has made the team better now and for the future.
Exactly.
You know, so. He got lucky with the Robin Lehner acquisition with the Vermette trade, but aside from Chris Campoli, he hasn't really made a trade for a guy who's actually stuck around the team for a number of seasons, right? At least at the NHL level.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously there is a concern, and it's genuine, and it should be there. It's deserved. But I know there was speculation in the last couple of weeks. Ottawa sent, I think it was one scout to a Columbus game about a week and a half ago. And then later, I guess earlier this week, actually, they had 3 scouts there for a St. Louis Columbus game. So whether or not Ottawa is close to making a move with Columbus is something I'll keep an eye on.
Yeah. I mean, the second line centers, I think, really the major issue there. I remember I watched the Vancouver game. And I know you and I were texting back and forth. And, yeah, the Sens made some mistakes and stuff like that. But you know what's wrong? Like, we don't have Ryan Kesler or a Ryan Kesler type player. Like, watching him play showed me everything I need to know about where the fatal flaw of this team is. Like, we don't have a guy who can score 80 points centering the second line.
How many teams do, though?
Well, the good ones do.
Well, yes and no. They're very limited. If you look around the league, how many teams have legitimate number one centers? It goes back to this article that Ian Mendez wrote that I commented on prior to the start of the season.
Philly, Chicago, Vancouver, San Jose, Pittsburgh. The teams that are serious contenders, they have them. Whether you go about it by drafting them and having that second line center put up that type of production while being paid for well below the market value of a second line center because he's still restricted free agent and whatnot. That's a different story. But the teams that are contending or that are at the top of their conferences have the one too.
I still look at this season like it's a bit of a status quo year. Like, what you see is what you're going to get, and they're going to ride it out. If they do well, great. If not, they have this offseason, tons of cap space. They can retool that, right?
Yeah.
I think they have like close to $50 million coming off the books. But I was listening to the Hot Stove last night on CBC, Hockey Night in Canada, and they were talking about Jeff Carter, who had recently signed his 11-year, I think it was $58 million deal with Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's right.
Mike Milbury brought up the point where a lot of these teams are kind of following the Chicago model, where it's imperative to lock up your young core and everyone else is kind of like tossed to the periphery. Like, there's such an emphasis on keeping all your young talent before they get to market and risk losing them for nothing. Like, it's not the old system in which you have a guy under team control until the age of 31. I think these guys hit unrestricted free agency at the age of 27 now.
Yes, it's somewhere around there.
So there's such an emphasis that you can't lose these guys for nothing, that all these teams are locking all their young players up to massive deals. Maybe not in terms of money, but at least in terms of years. And you're stuck with a core that is not only fairly reasonably paid, these guys have long-term contracts that are going to be difficult to move if this core can't win.
In a perfect world, you know, in a salary-capped type league, you look at the NFL, for example. I know you and I are huge fans of the NFL from the standpoint of how well-run a league it really is, and it is kind of the model of, if you're going to have a salary-capped system in your league, how it probably should work. And the thing is, it seems like GMs have kind of panicked under the cap, and they throw around the term cost certainty a lot. So they're giving these guys this huge deal that they believe, because it's a 10 or 12 or whatever year deal, they can lower the cap hit on some of these guys, and, you know, at least they know that they can account for a certain amount of dollars within their salary cap infrastructure. But the problem is that it's stagnating the league. One of the fundamental arguments for bringing in the salary cap in the first place was to try and, in any given offseason, create
player movement.
And an excess of and more free agents to try and drive down player salaries
and make teams that were have-nots more competitive.
Exactly.
To elaborate on that principle, I think you're right. It was kind of like an unforeseen consequence of the salary cap era, in which there is little movement these days. And right now, I think there's an even lesser margin for error.
Well, and another issue is that the salary cap has gotten too high. So GMs are able to give out these contracts because the salary cap is not in the low 50s anymore. It's in 58 now?
Yeah, it's close to 60.
Yeah. So, you know, in 3-4 years since the cap's been in place,
it's
gone up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so GMs can afford to take a calculated risk on giving out those types of contracts.
And teams are stuck with these guys. And what you've been left with is a situation in which it's not happening more often, but I think Wade Redden and guys like Sheldon Surrey are the forebearers of what's going to be happening in the next couple of years unless the situation gets resolved, in which you're going to have a number of veteran players who are maxed out on dollars and they're not going to be able to go anywhere. So what do? They're shipping them to the minors.
Yeah, and that's the other issue, right? Is you have teams like, for example, the Leafs, the Rangers, like teams that make a lot of revenue. The cap doesn't really apply to those teams anymore. Why? Because they can afford to send a guy to the minors, still pay his salary.
Well, they can afford to make mistakes.
Free up the cap space.
Yeah, they can take a chance on some of those riskier players, right?
So the haves once again become the haves, and the have-nots once again become the have-nots, because the other thing is some of those smaller market teams are still going to have that self-imposed cap, right? Like, Nashville's not going to spend more than $45 million a year on player salaries. It's just not going to happen.
I'm working on a piece right now for the blog, and it's kind of... it's all along the same vein that we're talking right now. And my conclusion's kind of... I think hockey's kind of headed towards that non-guaranteed contract situation that's going on in the NFL right now.
Well, you can't have a hard cap without that, I don't think.
I think... I know, like, a lot of listeners out there will be saying, you know, players will never go for that. But people were saying the same thing 10 years ago about a salary cap in hockey. Anyways, so let's say you take the Wade Redden contract, for example. In an NFL salary cap system, maybe when that guy signs a $39 million six-year contract, the Rangers say it could guarantee like $21 million. So let's say Wade Redden plays two seasons with the Rangers. He's still guaranteed that $21 million in salary. But for those two seasons, he only has a $6.5 million cap hit.
Yeah.
So at least in the sense that if they decide to let him go, the cap money comes off per year, but you're still paying that guy an extra whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in the NFL also, you know, signing bonuses, as we see in the tens of millions of dollars, signing bonuses, I guess is what you're saying, a certain amount of the contract guaranteed. So...
I think you'd still get your haves and your have-not situation, though, which I think is needed in the NHL. Like, I think you mentioned it earlier, but teams like New York and Toronto, I think those teams have to be haves in the NHL because that's what makes them special. Like, everybody wants to hate those teams. It's part of that love-hate relationship in hockey. You want to hate those teams because they have more money.
Yeah.
So let's say you end up doing this non-guaranteed contract thing, right? I think it still benefits everyone because the big market clubs could still afford to like guarantee most of a guy's contract, right? But at least they'd have the option to buy him out. And if they end up having to cut him, more guaranteed money that they have to pay elsewhere, right?
Yeah. And the other thing is with the emergence of the KHL and some of the more credible professional hockey leagues out there, if a player doesn't have a job in the NHL, it doesn't mean he can't play pro hockey anymore, right? There are alternatives now that have become available to some of these players.
And I think that's where Wade Redden's heading next year.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of guys, especially third and fourth liners, you know, they can go from one year to the next. They can have a job the next year. They can be in Russia. So
I just think it's a bit of a joke if a guy has the talent to play at the National Hockey League level, that the only thing preventing him from playing is his own contract value, that he's making too much money.
Yeah,
I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, because actually, in a case like Wade Redden's, the fact that you don't have non-guaranteed contracts, it hurts him because they can't just straight cut him, and he can't sign with anybody else. So he's
Okay, so let's go back to my example. Let's say Wade Redden gets bought out after, let's say, 1 year. After his first year in New York, they decide to cut him loose. So he's guaranteed $21 million over the remaining 5 years. He's already been paid $6.5 million. But if he signs, let's say he signs like a 5-year, $50 million contract with a team after he gets cut, he's making that money back over the same duration of time.
Yeah.
You know, but at least he's still playing in the NHL, and at least he's contributing to another team.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've never been a huge Wade Redden fan. I find it hard to believe that Wade Redden is not an NHL-caliber defenseman anymore, even of the third pair variety.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are starting to see, with the emergence of some of these types of long-term contracts that are being signed by players and other things going on, that the cap system, although well-intended in the NHL, I still think is flawed in certain major areas, and I think that needs to be rectified.
Well, we're talking about cap circumvention. Almost, what, 4-5 years since the lockout ended? Come on.
Yeah.
Fix the system. Do it properly. And I think this is the way it's going to head in the future.
Yeah.
And it's funny to say, but it's a situation in which you're almost having to save the owners from themselves again.
So, we can get into a whole lot of other issues about...
No, exactly.
How we feel that the NHL should be run, but hey, we don't get paid for that type. We don't get paid to make those types of decisions. The Count from Sesame Street does.
All right. So how about we take a break? We'll come right back. We'll talk a little bit about Jason Spezza's play.
That's awesome.
All right. Stay tuned. You're listening to Graham and Francois on the Sixth Sense Podcast. Shape I'm looking for, we'll meet a new way coming down to
All right, welcome back, Sens fans, to the Sixth Sense podcast, the most irreverent podcast, Senators podcast on the internet. That's right, we're more notorious than the Miami Hurricanes in the 80s. Now, we meant to address this at the top of the show, a little bit more of a serious matter, Graham. We just wanted to acknowledge the unfortunate, tragic passing of Luke Richardson's daughter. And I think we just wanted to take the time to, from us, offer our condolences to the Richardson family and to the Senators organization, who this has affected very, very deeply. And so we just want to point that out for the listeners and just offer up our condolences.
Well said. Let's talk about Jason Spezza. Man is a house on fire.
Phenomenal. This is the best I've ever seen Jason Spezza look in a Senators uniform.
It looks like he's in FU mode.
He is.
Coming off a summer of drama.
He's in total FU mode.
He has just taken it to a whole other level. He's making the players around him better. Peter Regan, this is the best I've seen him play in the past year and a half.
Yeah.
And he looks unbelievable right now playing alongside Spezza.
Kovalev's energized. Those three guys are all feeding off each other, but I think the real catalyst is Spezza. No question. No doubt about it. I mean, Regan and Kovalev had a little bit of chemistry, but once Spezza came back, boy, what a difference.
Do you think them getting meshed together is the recent reason for Ottawa's upswing in the standings?
Well, it's the only line that's consistently generating offense, so yeah, I think there's a strong case to be made that it's probably a major reason. Power play's been better.
That was kind of where I was headed next. How much credit do you give towards a guy like Sergei Gonchar for what he's been able to do in the short time that he's been here?
I think if we didn't have Gonchar this year, we'd be in huge trouble. I think he is, just because he's been in the lineup since the beginning, he's probably the MVP of this team up until this point in the season.
You're paying that much credence to him, eh?
Well, he just looks great, man. He's so smooth defensively. His angles, he's not overly physical, but his angles are just great. Offensive, like, he's just this very smart player. Because, I mean, take him away from that defensive core.
Eric Karlsson might be a little bummed, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He's another player who's actually put up a lot of points from the back end lately. I think he has 11 now, believe, in 15 games.
No, he's looking good. I mean, offense is not an issue. Not an issue with Eric Karlsson.
It looks like the kid has a swagger back.
Defensively, he's probably not where you would like him to be, but he still is relatively undersized. He's probably still getting used to angles and gap control on the NHL ice surface, and maybe from a defensive standpoint, the speed of the game. So, but that's all stuff that's, I'm sure, in due time he'll develop. I mean, defense is probably the toughest position to learn how to play at the NHL level.
You cross your fingers that kid will grow.
Oh.
Just another 10 pounds. It's not too much more to ask, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? Like, he's been undersized his whole career. So he's learned how to play and be like...
Against those rugged Swedes.
Yeah, like an effective... he's learned how to be an effective player as an undersized player.
To this point, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, look at Rafalski. Dan Boyle's not an overly big guy. There's a lot of defensemen out there who are relatively undersized. I mean, they're not 5'9", 164 soaking wet, small, but I don't think it's a huge issue. I'm sure he'll put on a little bit of weight, you know, over the course of the next couple of years in the off season.
And maybe his mustache will fill out at some point, too.
Yeah, he's doing the old Movember. it's about a week too much to Movember. I did it last year. It was just like the last week of November.
Disgusting.
Too much.
All right. So, speaking of defensemen, Filip Kubo returned to the lineup last night against the Bruins. He played okay. He contributed. More importantly, he got David Hale out of the lineup after Hale had a kind of a bad game against Vancouver. But as a whole, I think David Hale's played above expectations. I think the team has a significantly better winning percentage when he was in the lineup as opposed to when he was sent down to Binghamton to start the year. But now that Kuba's healthy, Hale and Brian Lee are still with the organization right now. I think it's expected that Hale will be sent down in the next few days. What do you think of these guys as scratches? Hale first, and then segue that into Brian Lee.
I think Hale has been very, very serviceable. I think he is a reasonable seventh defenseman type in the NHL. Unfortunately, with Brian Lee only having a one-way contract, that's obviously going to force Brian Murray's hand with respect to probably sending David Hale down to Binghamton. I mean, Brian Lee, let's just get him out. Get him out. I mean, the organization needs to move on. He needs to move on. He's clearly the Ottawa Senators don't seem to have ever taken a significant interest in his development. So just get him out. Like, just move on.
It's a bit ironic that a guy who, for the past few years, was probably good enough to play at the NHL level for this team, kind of has seen his development stagnate because he has the one-way contract now. He should be the defenseman who is sent down, whether it's a conditioning stint or just an outright release.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing to that guy right now is completely unfair.
Well, it's actually like worse than what they did to Schubert.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, I felt Schubert kind of got jerked around a little bit, but
this is a kid whose development is stagnated because they refused to play him at the NHL level, even though he was good enough at the time, and he hasn't developed in the past 2 years. He's kind of got jerked around by the organization, and if he resented the organization, I couldn't really blame the guy.
No, absolutely not. Like, you know, you're someone who gets picked in the first round, and it's not like when he got picked. There might have been a year there where we really didn't need him, but after that, it's not like we were a dominant team that couldn't have afforded to put him in the lineup every day to have him develop at the pro level, right? So I think at this point, it's just let him move on. We should move on. Like, there's no point in having this guy in the organization.
Well, it's weird because we held on to this guy because we couldn't afford to let him go for nothing at the time, and now it's gotten to the point
where he's worth nothing now.
Exactly. He's regressed to the point where he has no inherent value, and nobody's willing to give up anything to get this guy.
I mean, obviously,
it's sad.
Yeah, and we're not privileged to insider information, but do you think that there's an undertone there that, like, this was a Muckler draft pick, and
so we're going to punish this guy? I don't think Murray's that sadistic.
No, it's not, but I think it's just not that he wants to punish him, but maybe he had made up his mind that, like, well, this is not the guy that I would have taken, so. A lot of the moves have sort of had undertones of trying to rid everything that John Muckler did with the Senators.
No, that's absolutely true. You can't argue with that. Like, Murray's already had a conversation this season with Nick Foligno in which he said, Nick, use this opportunity with these second line guys to prove yourself, because who knows if you're going to get this opportunity again, whether that was a threat to move the guy or whether it's just, you know, just like a little boot in the ass for encouragement remains to be seen, obviously. But like, Nick Foligno is another guy who's on the trading block, I'd imagine, if Ottawa can afford to get better at the forward position.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing, I guess, just maybe wrapping up the David Hale, Brian Lee and whatnot conversation. I'm really starting to have problems seeing how Matt Carkner draws into the lineup over, like, a guy like David Hale. I don't, like, Carkner gets really exposed against some of the faster teams, especially to the outside. He can't turn. He's not winning any fights anymore. The problem is, I think you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because I think having Carkner in the lineup, then Neil doesn't feel the need to have to fight, like, the heavyweights on other teams, and he can play his game. So
I mentioned via Twitter to a couple people that I thought maybe Karkner's a guy who can slide into a Schubert kind of role for this team, where he plays like some fourth line minutes with guys like Winchester and Shannon and Zach Smith and Foligno and some of those other guys. And then he will get spot PK time.
Do you think that Karkner would be fast enough to be an effective fourth liner, like, you know, to work the cycle, to get in on the forecheck quick, aggressively? I'm not discrediting what you're saying, but maybe the fact that he's slower, he's less of a liability on defense than he would be at four, or he's still more effectively used as a defenseman than as a forward. I don't know. I don't know, given what his makeup is, I don't know how effective a forward he would actually be.
Wasn't he about to make the team out of camp last year as a forward, though, before they, like, slid him in as a defenseman and he started playing efficiently?
He might have even played a couple of games as a forward before.
I think
they
he did
slid
in the
back.
Preseason. In the preseason he did, for sure. So it's tough to say. It's tough to sit here and analyze, but maybe it could be a matchup thing moving forward. But Bruce Garriott's gone on record saying David Hale is expected to be sent down in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
I
think that's more a reflection of some of the contract structure in the organization, and less so the fact that David Hale is actually more an AHL than an NHL caliber defenseman.
Yeah.
So.
Some big AHL news. Bobby Butler is tearing it up.
Bobby B, he's playing wicked awesome.
Yeah, he's put up some Bochenski numbers.
Put him with Spezza and Heatley, and he'll score 18 goals in the preseason. Just like Nick Foligno.
There are a number of Binghamton centers who are actually outperforming what we thought they would. Obviously, Butler had a reputation as a scorer in college anyways. So his numbers maybe aren't as surprising as Jim O'Brien's. Dude has a pulse. What the hell's going on?
Hey. You know, he's playing with the dog man.
We'll recognize that.
He's playing with the dog man who we interviewed a couple of weeks ago. So, I don't know. But Bobby Butler, Bobby B, he's putting up points. I remember I saw him actually right after we just signed him. Well, I think it was last year. He drew in. And he looked good. Like, you could see there's some potential there.
No, he had a good release. I went to, was it his debut? It might have been his debut or his second game in. And, one of the first most noticeable things that I saw from him was his shot.
Yeah.
He had a fantastic release. And obviously it's translating well at the AHL level. I haven't seen him play. I might go to the bingo game later in Ottawa this month.
Yeah.
So check him out there unless he's up already. But it's nice to see some of these prospects are panning out, especially the ones that we didn't draft.
For sure. I don't think that Jim O'Brien has a future at the pro level in this organization.
He's such a target for this blog. We're just like, yeah, it's Jim O'Brien. He's a muckler pick. He won't pan. But no, to his credit, though, he's actually playing. I think he's playing very well at the AHL level.
Yeah, and good for him. He'll have a great career at the AHL level.
Hey, you're too hard on the guy. Too hard on the guy. But before we go, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the struggles. The struggles, Francois, of Montreal and Toronto. Andrei Markov injured his knee again.
I know.
He might be out. Rumor is 3 months.
Andrei Markov.
Yeah.
Best defenseman in the Eastern Conference. He is. Hey, he's a phenomenal player.
Oh, I'm not disputing that, but the guy can't stay healthy.
No.
He's worse than Filip Kuba.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, no, he's terrible.
Well, Kuba gets injured more, but Markov's injuries are more significant.
Nah, that's fair. Maybe he's like Milan-maholic.
Oh, let's not go back to that. We've moved on from talking about Milan.
So maybe the Montreal bandwagon's going to get a little lighter.
Well, when you have PK Subban, who apparently can walk on water, all may not be lost.
No, it's true. It's true. Carey Price will take exception to that Jesus comment, but
well, I think it was Pat Hickey wrote in the Gazette. He called, was it Scott Gomez, the 8 cent man? Like, not the $8 million man, the 8 cent man. Yeah, I think the guy, I think apparently based on the information coming out of Montreal media, it seems like Gomez has been out for the big skate for most of the year. So, you know what? I thought Montreal would not have a very good year this year.
Well,
their record is very good so far. I can't help but think the bubble's going to burst at some point, though.
I thought that organization had the structural integrity of like a deck of cards, like a house of cards.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as Carey Price imploded, they were finished.
And he's been playing very well.
He's held up to his end of the bargain.
Very well.
And he's been exceptional. So even though Halak's been off the
not quite as exceptional as Halak.
That is true. He's been playing exceptional as well. But I think the fans are nowhere near as crazy and as cynical as they used to be during the summertime.
Yeah. And I mean, as good as the Canadians are looking right now, the Leafs are looking just as bad. I watched bits and pieces of the Florida Panthers Leafs game because there was nothing else on. So I was like, hey, I'll do some scouting. And Toronto's horrible.
Scouting for what?
I'm just messing around. But I mean, Toronto, like, they're really bad. They're really bad.
Yeah, they've lost 8 in a row. Everything conceivably that could go wrong is going wrong.
But Clark MacArthur's on pace for 47 goals this year.
And if it wasn't for him, their secondary scoring would be absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Outside of Phil Kessel's hot start and Clark MacArthur's play, they've had absolutely no offensive support up front.
But I think we've talked about this before after they traded for Kessel. And I forget who brought up what. One of the topics of conversation was that we didn't feel Kessel was a guy who could create his own shot. And we felt that would be problematic for Toronto because they didn't have a center like Mark Savard that he could play with. And that that has turned out actually to be a huge issue, because Kessel is, his point production is,
oh, it's stagnant,
abysmal.
He's turning into a peripheral player though. Like, yeah, he's shied away from the middle of the ice, and he's just reverted to like what we used to see from like Danny Heatley when he was struggling, right? He just kind of stick along the boards, and you might get a snapshot from the top of the circle, and that's all you're going to get from the guy.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is, like, they banked on, I think Tyler Bozak is probably a very good NHL type player, but banking on that guy to be your number one center
when
he's 1 year removed from NCAA level hockey is just entirely unrealistic.
Yeah, and now they've called up Dolly and Nazem Kadri from the AHL, and let's throw these guys right in the oven.
Yeah,
I can't stand Kadri as a prospect, but I kind of feel bad for the guy. It's not a situation conducive to success.
And then, like, in true Toronto media type fashion, like, Kadri plays his first game, and like, obviously everyone expects him to, like, you know, put up like 7 points. And he got, like, you know, he didn't do anything really of note or anything like that. And so
there was I think it was Greg Brady from the Fan 590 in Toronto. He tweeted, it was late last week. He tweeted he had heard from some source that if Toronto bottomed out for the second consecutive year and Boston receives another top three pick in that Phil Kessel trade, Brian Burke's going to get canned.
And he should.
Oh, deservedly.
He should. I mean, he needs a number one center. He can't get one because he can't draft one. He's got no first round
picks. And there's going to be nobody available in free agency. Maybe, well, Brad Richards.
Yeah,
right?
But they don't have the cap. I don't think they'll have a cap space to give Brad Richards the type of contract that he's going to command on the open market.
Do you think Brad Richards would look for a raise off his, what, 7.8? He might even be making $8 million a year.
He's put up some good numbers in Dallas. So, well, yeah.
But with the way the market's dictating, like, if all these young players, like, there's even room for Washington to re-sign Semin. So, conceivably, like, your free agent market could be, like, Brad Richards and Andrei Markov, and then Christian Ehrhoff might be, like, the third best player available. It's kind of, it's a bit of a joke.
Yeah, because Backus re-signed in St. Louis.
No, and, yeah, exactly. He's another guy. That was my man crush for the offseason.
I texted you. I remember I texted you when I saw it go by on the ticker on a, like, sports station. I texted you. I was like, well, the dream is over. Yeah, Backus re-signed.
Part of me died on the inside.
Yeah, so.
it's a big concern. Even as an Ottawa fan, we mentioned this in the first half of the show, that, you know, with $50 million in cap space, you kind of look forward to the offseason and seeing what Ottawa might or might not be able to do. But if there's no name talent available that can help your club immediately, at least it'd be nice to get some young talent that's entering its prime for a change. Like, in the past couple of years, we signed some guys who are aging vets who maybe were stars at one point, still good players, but they're not long-term answers or fixtures, right?
Put your Brian Murray hat on.
Done.
Do you go after Brad Richards to be the 1B center of the Ottawa Senators?
What's because the
they might have the
right?
They could have the space to go after him in the offseason. It's not inconceivable, right?
No, but essentially, I think if let's say a guy like Semin re-signs in Washington, then if Brad Richards is the best offensive talent available, obviously it's a bit concerning because I think the guy is like close to 31 years of age. So if you sign that guy to a 5, 6, 7, 8 year deal, then your team might be competitive for the next while, but you might be having some cap issues quick.
With the way Spezza's playing now, a combination of Jason Spezza, Brad Richards as your top two centers in the Eastern Conference, which is pure shit. pardon the language. But the Eastern Conference is all over the place. If in the foreseeable future, over the next 4 or 5 years, with a 1-2 punch of Spezza, Brad Richards, that might be good enough to get you through the conference once, if not a couple of times, in a playoff run.
Yeah, and obviously, like, the glaring issue would be goaltending and defense, right? Because it would be young, because you'd have to compensate with lower salaries at those positions. But yeah, Ottawa might be able to do that because they have young talent coming through the system. It's just a matter of, okay, if we're going to try and compete now, should we roll the dice with all these young players on the back end?
Yeah.
And whether that's Robin Lehner and the young prospects that we've mentioned in previous shows, you're rolling the dice. But yeah, if you look at the market the next 2 years, if you're not getting a Zach Parise, the market's terrible.
Yeah. So
maybe you roll the dice. And there's no one coming in the system, at least not yet.
Because based on what the availability of UFAs is going to be in the next 2 or 3 years, Brad Richards he's definitely up there.
Yeah.
In terms of what you can go out and get if you're interested in making that type of move. So I think it's something interesting. And the other thing is, yeah, he is 31, but unless I'm mistaken, he's you know, he seems like he's avoided any sort of major injuries over his career and stuff like that. So he doesn't have a history of injury, and doesn't seem conditioning is going to be an issue. A lot of these guys are playing until they're 40 and relatively effective doing so. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it'd be something interesting to explore.
And since winning the Conn Smythe in that playoff run, that magical Tampa Bay playoff run, he's been Ron McLean's man crush ever since.
Yeah.
So at least he'd be talking about Ottawa all the time.
Exactly.
So that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. But so I guess another issue about in regards to Richards is that team's kind of undergoing an ownership problem, right?
Yeah.
So as long as it's current ownership, maybe that guy doesn't sign with Dallas and stay in Dallas. But Mark Cuban's a name that's kind of like rumored to be purchasing the Stars.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Well, he's been teased before, right? He's been a name for, I think, the
Chicago
Penguins.
Cubs.
And the Penguins, yeah.
So Mark Cuban didn't make that much money by making stupid business decisions. I don't think buying the Dallas Stars is a particularly smart business decision. Mind you, if it's just going to be a toy, maybe, then maybe he does do it. But
has pissed away a lot of money with the Mavs.
Yeah. So I don't know. Who knows? I think it'd be interesting to have an owner like
Mark Cuban in the
NHL.
I wonder if like Gary Bettman would like let like Turtle from Entourage negotiate that deal like it's a tequila company. No? You're shaking your head?
Oh, man.
No?
Don't get me started on Bettman.
Okay. All right. So I guess that's it for another week. You're looking tired. You're nodding off.
Hey.
You missed Tim.
It's a rough life.
I missed Tim too.
Yeah, and I miss our buddy with the Gilligan hat on. And
yeah, he's not in.
Not here. You know, not here.
We're not in here on a Thursday night.
The energy level is way down.
Good stuff. All right. Well, Francois, thanks for another wonderful edition of the Sixth Sense podcast.
Hey.
Always a pleasure. Pleasure.
Always a
it
pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Yeah. Anyways, thanks, listeners, for listening. And once again, we pass along our deepest sympathies towards the Senators organization and the Richardson family. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care. Issues today, my friends. I hope you like them. They have Velcro straps.